I'm entertaining the people, and I'm also a Sir Colin. Is calling for peace in the carnival and love. And also all the youth, the young generation of today. I am begging them and I'm preaching to them. And I'm selling my record, I'm selling clothes, I'm selling cloth to help the young generation of England today. Black, white, pink, blue, you name it.
Like submarines, got periscopes, like Ali does. The rope-a-dope, I think your bad breath lady needs a bottle of scope, yo. We got to kick it.
It's like Norman Mailer needs an envelope. Like your fat ass mama needs some cantaloupe. Like Walter White needs an isotope.
We need to kick it. Like the NSA likes to interlope. Like Billy Crystal, like the guys on soap. Like the mayor of San Diego who likes to grope, yo. We like to kick it.
Like Nancy Reagan likes a horoscope. Like Galileo likes a telescope. Like Mrs. Willenda likes my thick, tight rope.
We like to kick it. Like your pregnant little sister who's got to elope. Like your boy Buster Keaton needs a skinoscope. Like Dr. Marcus Welby needs a stethoscope. We need to kick it.
It's like the Cardinals like to meet the Pope. And like the Democrats like to vote for hope. Like cancers rock the Torah trope.
We like to kick it.
We're sloping.
Sloping on a, what's today? Thursday.
It's not our usual day. It's usually not a Tuesday. But
I'm geared up for our boy, Lawrence Jacobson.
Got one of my boys. Snake. One of my boys.
We're completing, the circle will be complete tonight. Yeah. Let me tell you what, my friend Jeff Whiteman, right?
Yeah, sure.
He just was like, what? He was going through the nicknames and going, what's with this mwah thing? And, you know, I explained the origin of it to the best of my ability. And I believe that we have a guest today that I believe the legend is that it's his name.
He coined it. I don't think even he sort of will be able to trace back a little bit. You know, maybe I'm underestimating Larry, but if anybody could,
if anyone could tell you why Mwah is called Mwah,
it would be him.
It's going to be our guest. It's got to be the first question.
It should be.
I really think so.
All right,
so
we're going to open with that. Yeah. We're going to open with that. He may have a very detailed analysis. So I'm not even going to get into my story. Maybe I can fill in the gaps when he's telling it. But
I wouldn't be surprised.
He's a man on the shit. He does have a great memory, too. So that's why it's cool
Snake,
to have him here.
He does. Very he really memory. Does, yeah. So he was the fifth amigo in L.A. Mm-hmm. in 1980, whatever year it was.
That was it, 80. You got 80. It. Should have ended
there
right
go.
There.
1980. And, you know, it was definitely, you'd have to say, you know, it was definitely like, Eddie and Steve were together, inseparable. And you and I, obviously, you know, here we sit podcasting. We're very close friends. But Snake was with us.
Yeah, sure.
Jake was hanging with us.
Well, he was in our bunk the previous year, too.
Well, Jake was with many years.
I was never in a bunk without Jake, when it comes down to it, except when I was a counselor.
You guys were in, so there was the Roslyn crew. Larry right. Jacobson's from Roslyn, as is Howard. Mm-hmm. Mwah. And
Howie, excuse me.
And
either way,
you see how
Moses Ben Aaron,
flexible he is. And it was you, John Powell, Larry Jacobson, Andy Murstein, David Feldman, Mike Schnapp, and
there was a bunch
something
of other guys,
knocked
though.
Them down. Somebody knocked them down.
There was Carrie Diamond. There was David Wallman. There was Mitchell Rosner. There were a lot of Alan Friedman. There were a lot of guys.
David Wallman,
come and go.
Obviously, I remember clearly. I don't remember Mitchell Rosner. I'm so sorry, Mitchell, if you're listening. I don't remember him. He was a Roslyn guy.
He was only there the one year when I started, 1976. So that year it was me, Mitchell, Andy Murstein, Boog, Feldman, Jake, and I think David Wallman too was in our bunk, which was odd.
Wally was around from early.
I think he started that year too. But the funny thing about him is that we had all gone to an elementary school at the time called Harbor Hill. Okay. And then we all met up in junior high. But David was from another elementary school. So he was a Roslyn guy, but he was sort of not a Roslyn guy.
Okay,
he
but you didn't, with us. So you didn't really know him?
No, I didn't know him at all. I met him at Swigum.
That's not as relevant then, I don't think. Mm-hmm. It wasn't someone that you knew from school. I think that's the really important piece.
Definitely.
It's crazy. You know, I had a few people that I brought to Swigum. David Mindich, Todd Simon. Do you remember
you brought
came
Mindich?
For 1 year? I brought Mindich
He was there for a while.
Swigum, yeah. Yeah, he was there for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
A guy named Bruce Grobman came for a year. Rich Aronwald, all the people that came along, they heard me talk. I think they just heard me like
and they didn't
being so excited about it. Like when I get home,
there was another dude in the interns that came up.
Who's that?
tall guy. Also a pretty decent basketball
Rich
player.
Rich Aaronwald,
yeah. I said. I'm sorry.
Nice guy from like Bridgewater.
He was a nice guy.
But you know what? I think, you know, people heard my passion during the offseason.
I must go and see what he's talking
what
about.
Why is this guy so into this
He's
place?
Adamant in the cafeteria.
And then I think maybe I just set the bar too fucking high and they just were disappointed like when they came. Sucks, you know, this is not what Alan Burleson said.
Right.
This is not what Duke was saying this place is.
Well, it seemed to happen to a couple of Roslyn guys too. Like I said, there were six or seven guys that came for a year or two and then vanished. Mike Schnapp too, right? We mentioned Schnapp.
You know, it's interesting. We talk about like how loyal we all are, but you know, a lot of people did move on. Yeah. Andy Murstein didn't get past Ranger year.
Well, it's like when they talk to people about success and they're like, well, you know, what are the things that made you successful? And, you know, it could be the same things that people that didn't succeed did, okay. But you're talking to the successful people, so you think that somehow is the causation where it's just,
right.
You know, you just have a refined
sample. But in the main, if you look back over the years, you know, I'd say a good 50% of the people loved it, dug it, and kept going. Even if they didn't super love it like to the level we did, they loved it.
True. But it's amazing to me in retrospect like how different it is. If you didn't quite complete it, if you didn't go to second year senior, somehow or another then
it seems so incomplete.
Lost it. Like Eric Friedman to me is the type of guy, like he was there for us, he was a good friend of ours, and he didn't come back as a second year senior. I was sort of like, all right, you know.
You know, I mean, it's you have to expect that along the way people got enticed by other things that are interesting, you know,
and team tours were huge, you know.
Burke, we've talked about
Teen Tours. Had that sexual element too, that you can go to and Teen Tour and something might happen.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, it did, baby. It did. You know, the Teen Tours are where it happens. You're out there on your own. You're in the real world. You're sitting in a bus. You're right. You're like just with the same people for such an extensive
sitting in a bus
of time.
Didn't seem, even if things were happening in the bus, didn't seem too thrilling.
I don't
to
think
me.
Anything happened in the bus, but maybe it did. I mean, you had tents. You had freedom, much more freedom than you had. Well, with women, I mean, I didn't feel like we had any freedom with the girls at camp. It was all just chasing the night, whatever that meant.
Chasing the night.
You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't
doing
it.
Sounds like a Michelob commercial.
Listen, I'm a copywriter. Anyway.
No, I think you had freedom with the girls, too. I think if you went to Swat Hill with them, they left you alone.
That's
right?
not what I mean by that. Like,
freedom to sort of have...
You were in the real world with these girls at 15 years old, roaming around San Francisco, walking a hike in Zion National Park. Like,
right, getting to know them a little bit better.
That, and you were also much more free to, like your day was... You weren't in a group. It's not like the entire Teen Tour does the hike together. Like, people can separate. Like, during the day, you did go separate. I'm trying to remember, but it was like when you go to cities, I don't think a counselor had to be with you.
No?
I don't really remember. No. Hmm. Anyway.
Okay.
I digress.
All right. So, we're awaiting Larry's arrival. We're lucky to have him, because I originally proposed that he call in, and they told me he was coming to New York in October. And I was like, all right, we'll do it then. So, here we are. And, looking forward to speaking to him. I haven't seen him since the
I haven't seen Snake either. You know, Larry moved away. He moved to L.A. many, many, many years ago. So he's been the one, you know, Eddie and Steve, just along the years, we do see
always
them.
Always see them.
You know, Howie, obviously, Moy, I see all the time now. But Larry was always distant. And, you know, Facebook brought him closer. And then at least in terms of keeping up with what he's up to. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to hear what he's up to.
Me too.
Yeah. I think he's an author now. I mean, he's out there on Facebook a lot. He's putting himself out with a lot of stuff. I'm curious to hear what he's up to. It's for sure.
Yeah, well, we'll get to it. We'll ask him. So
easy to do.
Yeah. Anyway, also, we just did a podcast this past Sunday.
Good point.
At Downtown Music, which is located on Monroe Street in Manhattan, and you know, for Steve Popkin and his band, and it was fun to do it and all, but you know, we've got some editing to do because it was our first on location podcast. And
well, it was also done in an environment like, so here we are out on location, and you just have, you have a mic that's, and it's for a music show, and they're practicing playing music, you know, they're warming up. It was extremely difficult environment to even,
it was
like, I don't think a highly skilled engineer could have. I'm not saying it's not achievable, but we were in the middle of a room where these guys were just tuning up their clarinets and like, there's no way in the world like the sound was going to be good. And
maybe
it wasn't.
If we had what we have here, where it was sort of very isolated microphones, it would have been better. But we used the new microphone that incorporates more of a group feel. So Did you know?
Okay, when I arrived, I was expecting to find a club. Were you? Did you know we were going to a music store?
I knew it was a record store. I did.
So Popkin's always been involved. You'll hear it. You know, we're gonna. So why don't you? You know, you were starting to say what we're.
Oh, so
what we're going to do with it. Like so we're going to get something up at some point. There's a lot of editing that has to happen, unfortunately.
I told Steve we got to edit it, and I told him, too, I'd love to have a piece of, if you recorded it, and I think you did, some of Dissipated Face's music. So we'll end the podcast that way. And
do we have to, like, sign off on anything there or anything legally? You're our lawyer. Like, are we okay?
No, I mean, if it's a Dissipated Face original, unless Ben Face comes around and claims a
Ben's
sole
been known
ownership.
To club people.
I don't know.
Who don't pay up.
Yeah.
You know?
I guess, I'll take my chances, I think.
All right, fine.
Steve, give me the rights.
Fine. There's not, you know, I'm with you.
All right. So we're going to hang out for a bit, me and the Duke, and we'll come back. And when we do, we'll have Larry Jacobson with us.
Psyched to have the snake.
All right. And we're back on
the
slope.
We're back.
Me and Alan. You know what? We were going to wait for Larry, and then we said, you know what?
Nah. Well, let's talk a little bit. Let's talk a little bit. So, you know.
Give me what you got.
Let's talk politics a little bit.
Uh-uh.
No, not ugly politics, just real politics. So, what you stand in a very, I mean, my understanding of your politics, that you have a very libertarian view on a number of things.
Libertarian view on the vast majority of things.
And personally, I probably share the libertarian view on everything. With foreign policy,
okay.
Probably right in line with most of that, and definitely not in line from a domestic policy perspective. But how did you, like, I felt like this particular situation that just occurred,
mm-hmm.
like it kind of had to play out this way. And I don't care if it's a Republican or Democratic president. If you give in on paying our fucking bills, then if it's this minority can make that happen on whatever side, I don't care what side it is, and I am a person who believes that I can really talk objectively and not be skewed by my own personal beliefs to some extent with these kinds of things.
I always try to do that. I'm always like, please go out of my way to take the other side's.
But what's to say if he would have given in on anything at this point, then the next thing is, well, if you don't overturn the abortion, you know, Rover, you know, abortion laws, or you don't do this, it doesn't matter what it is, they could just keep holding you hostage. And I don't understand why we set up a political system. They say that they do this thing about the debt limit,
mm-hmm.
so that we can make sure that we don't act irresponsibly. But why are we not doing that prior to spending the money? This idea that we address it, are we going to pay the bill after we've spent the money, is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life.
I hear. Listen, to me, the whole issue on all of this right now, the mm-hmm, whole, mm-hmm. whether it's specifically this, the debt limit and Obamacare and funding it or not funding it, you know, these questions to me are sort of ancillary. Because to me, the issue is, like you said, I'm very much a libertarian, but I'm also try to be, I think, a realist. And when I'm being a realist, I see there's, you know, a proclaimed $17 trillion debt, you know, and that doesn't include Medicaid, Social Security, Medicare. Okay. Yeah, you throw those in, we got $70 trillion. We've got to do something.
Okay, fine.
But if doing something means you're in the Senate or you're in the House of Representatives and you have that, you know, that's in your mind that the most important issue for this country, to stay this country, to be this society that we all live in, the biggest issue is we've got to maintain our fiscal health.
Right.
We can't go under. We can't have a bankruptcy and social revolutions. One man, I try not to be like a survivalist or anything like that, and hopefully never gets to that kind of stuff. But I think the issue is so downplayed, and we need to do something about it. We never have.
I actually happen to agree with you completely, but I guess it's just about what you're going to do to go about managing that problem. And
I think it's
you can't just say, hey, the thing I think I'm going to do is what you better fucking do, or I'm shutting down the government and I'm going to not approve the limit and our credit will go to shit. I happen to agree with you.
I think you do what you got to do at this point. I do. I think you do what's. And I don't think. I don't think the House did anything that people were like, how can they do this? You know, they're constitutionally empowered to do this, so they did this, and I would do it too. I would have done it too because this issue is so important and so critical. As far as I'm concerned, I may be completely wrong. Maybe something that reverses this whole national deficit issue and we were able to regain our fiscal health. But I don't see it happening. And so we have to do something. Okay, otherwise, I don't want the end of my life to be this horrible situation.
First, you have to say what you're going to do. What is it you're going to do? But even beyond that, I don't think the vast majority of the Republicans are even willing to do what you might think should be done at this point. And there are counter views as to what we should do to address this issue. You could simply say raise fucking taxes by a magnitude and that'll address the issue. That may be one answer. So
implement a wealth tax. I'm okay with that.
If
that's part of the solution.
I'm all good with negotiating, but you can't set up these scenarios. Our system of government was not set up originally. Fucking telecommuter and telecall on this time. Was not set up to use these kinds of things to hold the people hostage. I mean, it's a true
But thing. They were, because they are allowed to do what they did. I mean, you can't say they can't do it. They were able to from a procedural perspective.
Oh, I'm so discombobulated now with that call coming in.
Hang on.
I'm not debating that anyone's acting outside the lines of how you're allowed to do it. I'm not debating that at all. But I don't think that's the way it should be. Forget what.
So what do we got here, man? Who's calling in? Who's interrupting our political conversation? Everybody call this number.
Everyone bombard these
fuckers. Bombard these fuckers, man. He has me and Alan. We're trying to break it down. Come to some solutions.
It's Continual Health Partners, the business. See? It's the business office.
Obamacare's calling you on the phone now. The website doesn't work.
I don't know. I thought I'm on the do not call list.
I think that too. I don't think that works.
It doesn't
work. We talked about this before.
Yeah, we have. Anyway,
maybe with CT.
Every time that call happens. So, listen, they need to sit down, but I'm just, ultimately, they're going to sit down and come. You know, when you really weigh where the most Republicans and most Democrats stand on fiscal issues, they're kind of just a little bit of a degree on either side.
I agree with you. I find it very disappointing that that's the case.
That Barack Obama is so similar to Mitt Romney in terms of fiscal policy. They're the same thing, and it's a joke that we've defined these people by these far, the bases that one has to appeal to. These guys say these outlandish things to them, and it's bullshit.
Well, even and I supported Romney and Ryan because at the very least, they talked about the fact that what I'm talking about is a big issue was an issue, and they said, we are going to do something about it. But then when people would ask them more specifically, what are you going to do?
They were too chicken shit to say here.
And like you said, if somebody comes out and says, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make Social Security raising the age to 72. We're going to implement a wealth tax. If you have assets of over a certain...
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. You're going to get hit
once every 5 years, once every 10 years with this tax because we're so fucked up. Hopefully we can do away with it once we get our shit together. But for right now, that's the contribution. Okay. My whole thing is address this issue. And the Democrats, to me, the Republicans too, because again, where are the specifics?
I think it's equal. But nobody's laying anything out for real.
And it's crazy to me. It's like, I hope I'm not right. I hope it's not 15, 20 years from now. And it's like, oh, you see, I told you. Like, we got rampant inflation. There's no way to pay this stuff off.
I'm not worried about that particular scenario.
Really? I don't think we're worried about it because we've never lived through anything even remotely similar to something like that.
Remotely similar to what? What are you even saying?
To some sort of a hyperinflationary situation, similar to what occurred in Argentina and in Germany between World War I and World War II. And again, I'm not trying to be
order for that to happen, and I'm not an economist, I believe that our currency would have to not be the predominant currency in the world. Like, as long as we're the predominant currency in the world that people trade against, don't believe that we could ever have that hyperinflationary thing without the entire fucking world going through that in some kind of disaster.
Okay, but just breaking it down to basics, to me, it seems, if we owe so much money and we're in control of printing our money, we're in control of, the demand and the supply.
Yeah. Like,
we're creating demand for having this debt exist, but we can also print up as much money as possible to pay that off if things get tight.
Right.
So to me, you put those two things together, and it seems inevitable that unless something is done, a hyperinflationary situation kicks in.
Let's switch gears for a second. Yeah. I said, we're on the same subject, but just switching tracks. I remember talking to one of our mutual friends, and I believed this at the time, and I still believe it now. I don't know why we didn't do it. I don't know how this country can be competitive with the world without building an infrastructure that's superior. You have to stay ahead on that stuff. So here we are in this environment in 2008. The world's imploding.
In the United States or the world?
The world and the United States. Okay. Things are imploding. Our infrastructure is shit. I don't know.
What do you define as infrastructure?
Our bridges, our train system, our public transportation to and from airports, our roads, our internet infrastructure, our cell phone infrastructure. Everything is shit. Our energy, everything.
Compared to who?
When I was in Iceland, I had better fucking cell service than I had here. Yeah. Wayne Phillips and I are out in the middle of the fucking tundra. Excuse me for yelling. Of the tundra on some iceberg, and
how
I'm
dare call, say tundra.
And I'm emailing and texting people. You go look at the rail systems everywhere. I don't know.
Listen, I've been in the middle of China, and like I get 5 bars of service. I'm a T-Mobile guy, and then I get to my house, and there's nothing.
Okay, so you agree with me?
Well, on cell service in China, definitely, and I think on the most part too. Like there, you know, you do go to a foreign country every now and then, and you do see things that are impressively futuristic.
Here's my point. I don't know how anyone could argue without balancing the numbers. I don't know how you could argue in the main that having an improved infrastructure will help this country and be more productive.
Okay.
So I don't understand why we didn't go borrow money at the rates that were low as shit, free basically, to go employ people.
Who's we?
The government should have gone and done this. We should have done a much bigger stimulus.
Like a Roosevelt jobs program.
Yes,
maybe more
and employed zillions of people, got them working on all of these projects, built the infrastructure where we could borrow the money for nothing because we are going to have to do it at some point anyway, and employed people. They are now earning revenue. They are now paying taxes, and the whole thing moves forward. And I still, to this day, it's what Friedman and those guys say. I just don't get why we didn't do that. That was so obvious to me in 2008 and 2009. And number two was that we needed to work the government almost.
Let's break it down, though, because I feel like it's a little too broad-based in terms of what you're saying is important infrastructure. I agree with you as far as broadband. I agree with you as far as cell service. You know, mass transit to the airports. I don't know about that. I don't know if that's so important. Rail. I'm not so big on rail. I think rail is like, we have airplanes. Like, I don't understand when they implement these plans to have a rail system between San Francisco and Los Angeles or whatever is going on in California.
How about our bridges? And I don't know. Look,
falling down, like, what can we do to make them more efficient? Unless, like, you know, trucks are on them and they have goods and the bridge collapses and the truck falls in the river. Like what can we do to make our bridges more efficient?
I saw, you know, a show that reported on this specifically, and you know, I have to go deal with the facts. I don't remember the particulars.
Dig them out, man. Talk out your ass.
Well, I'm going to talk generally out of my ass, but the number of bridges that are in a position, about 5 months ago, something like that, a truck clipped.
Calicoon, right?
No, this is up in Seattle or Portland, somewhere in the Northwest. A truck clipped one particular bolt on a bridge, which led to the bridge collapsing, the truck falling in, and disaster.
Mm-hmm.
The number of bridges that are built this way, where there's not even a redundant backup, is significant. I don't want to say the number. I don't know it.
Okay.
And I believe, based on what I heard, that the number of bridges that are at risk right now, not just to fall down because a car goes over, but what if someone bumps the rail wrong and it catches this, is a significant number. Our rail system's terrible. I don't know how if we move things faster. And let me answer about the airports. I believe that will drive even further tourism in this country to have efficient systems. People across the world are used to being moved across public transportation systems. The amount of tourism that would increase by having, in New York City alone, simply a way to get to and from the airports efficiently, I believe would pay for those programs.
Well, I would hope it would. And then, because you're proposing it as some sort of money-making, you know,
I am.
Better thing.
If it wasn't going
better, to. It better do that.
It
yeah.
better do that. I agree. In terms of building into the airports, listen, if I'm a city and I want to be competitive and I want to, isn't that something that you want to do? New York is difficult with airports.
I don't know. Have you ever heard of a city where the city was doing, you know, things
aren't...
It's
not my primary argument,
no, I understand,
so I don't want to get caught up on
no,
this.
No, I'm just trying to be real with it. Like, I don't know of any city in my lifetime where, all right, the city's not working out well, we got to do something, so what do? We put in a mass transportation monorail system.
Well, first
and
of all,
things,
it's only major
and,
cities
and
that I'm talking
happen.
About. And I'm talking about it being competitive for getting things like Olympics and things of that nature. I'm not talking about small cities. It's New York City... Probably, well, I don't even know if I'm talking about New York City right now. It's absurd that we don't have that here. It should be simple. And I guess you can get to Newark. All right, let's not get the too down this road. It's not that important. It's not that critical to it. But you get my point. And I feel
No, I do. And I agree with you on cell service and broadband. The other stuff, I don't agree with you.
The bridges and the roads?
Fix it. If a bridge is going to collapse as a matter of safety, fix it, of course, if they need a redundancy system as far as what's going to keep it safe.
What about energy? How do you feel on that? What do you think we should be doing there?
Go for it all. I'm go for it all. I'm, you know, I don't want to say drill, baby, drill, but drill, baby, drill. You know, and develop solar and wind and do everything we can. Because I feel like technologically speaking, solar power does, at this point in time, work for us to some degree. You know, and electrical works for us to some degree.
Well, so does wind, except that the cost of acquiring that energy is greater than all of the other things.
But clearly we have some traction on all of these things. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of time. So I don't see it as a dire emergency that, yikes, we have to cut out fossil fuel right now and convert over. Because I think, like, I don't know. I would think within 100 years from now, like, we'll probably have that done.
And I'm not really sure where I stand here, but do you see a government role in promoting the advancement of energy resources and technology?
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Like, do you think the government should be investing, giving credits, and pushing that? Like, do you think that's so critical that it should be something to compete with the European nation? You know, the Europeans do that kind of thing. They're creating the technologies.
Nah,
do you think
keep,
that energy
keep
is
that
just
shit
like,
free market?
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
Yeah. That's my, you know, because that's, you know, the guy who's going to develop the best solar panel, the guy who's going to develop the best electric battery, that you know, let him go at it, and, you know, they'll profiteer from that. I mean, I'm not saying the government shouldn't be involved in any sort of research. It should be government grants for research in those fields, I think. But, you know, as far as them altering, and I'm really down on this, like altering market dynamics by issuing credits or, you know, or other incentives. I'm not big fan of that. In certain situations, I might be, but you'd have to.
And in the case of oil, I assume you're not okay with that also, because it's absurd how much credit they give to the oil industry.
Do they for what?
I don't know exactly, but they give these huge tax credits.
I hear about
drilling
that all the time,
and
but I know, somebody hasn't explained to me yet what exactly an oil company gets as a benefit of being an oil company compared to some other.
What does any of these companies get for those credits? I don't know. I'm not an accountant. I don't know the details
know.
Of all
I don't
that.
Know. I have
how
no
do these
idea.
Companies end up not paying taxes? And how do they get all the subsidies? They get all these subsidies.
I don't know. We've got to look at that. We've got to look at that.
You know, it's not, well, it is important. But
it is important.
I'm not looking
it
at
important.
It right now. Let's go a little deeper on another day. You want to switch gears?
Yeah, go.
Do you care about baseball at all?
Not at all.
Do you know even who's playing? I think the Cardinals are, because
I think
I heard so.
The Cardinals and the Dodgers, right? In the National League.
There was a point in my life when the Mets were good that I cared about baseball, but I didn't even then it was difficult to care.
It was only 1 year they were good. I feel like that, like the
86.
First year out of college, right? I come over to you and in S. Weiss's place.
Ian,
That was the only year I was into baseball ever. And when I say into it, I still wasn't into it.
Coming over to our place to hang out.
All right, it's the seventh inning. All right, I'll watch the rest of it.
Yeah, a lot of people love baseball.
Do you remember this woman?
Yeah, I was about to say the woman spinning and rotating her. What would you call that? What would you call that motion?
I don't know. There's really nothing that is.
What else would you do that's like...
Speed bag?
It's a speed bag motion. That's exactly right. I should. How do I not know this?
Come on, man.
Because I do that. I do tricks now.
Look
baby.
Out! Look out!
Right. Left. Yeah, you know, baby. Yeah, I don't give a shit about baseball either. This is a weird time in sports.
I don't give a shit about
me.
Football this year. I think I told you that. Granted, the Giants are 0-6. So that kind of sucks.
I thought you were more of a Jets fan. Than
I am
Giants,
more of a Jets fan, but I don't really feel it from the Jets either. You know, I don't think they're going anywhere.
I feel exactly how you do. I'm waiting for basketball to start, and I'm not sure how much I'm going to be as jazzed about it as I've been.
I don't know. I've left professional sports to some degree. I used to, if I'd be in a barbershop, I'd always reach for the post and read the sports section. Like,
yeah,
that was always what I went
yeah.
for, and it's not anymore at all. So I don't know. I don't know what happened. It wasn't a conscious choice on my part, but I don't know. Sports don't seem to hold it for me.
Maybe maybe the introduction of the internet and the massive amount of content.
So much
that's
more.
Available.
You're right. That's what it is. There's yeah. just so much more choice.
Oh, wait. Oh. Something special's happening.
That's
We're
our,
taking a
That's
break.
Our guest bugle. We are on.
This is great.
Yeah. Got my man.
Larry Jacobson in the house.
What's up, man?
Hello.
Welcome
all.
To the
Hello.
Slope. Here he is.
Love being here on the slope. Yeah, I got to tell you, you guys are freaking awesome. I sit in my apartment out here in Los Angeles. Yeah. I always tell my wife, I'm like, dudes, we're chilling.
The West
I
Coast digs
the slope.
Man.
It's great.
Wow. We've got an audience. That's awesome. We're so happy to have you here.
It's great, man. It's
really
great
that you're
to
in town.
Thank you.
So, we could just, you know.
We'll break into like what you wanted to open up with.
I want to ask one question
because I'm curious too.
Yeah, it's been a consistent theme in every one of our podcasts. I believe you are the person that coined the nickname Mwah. Is that accurate? Is it inaccurate? Tell us how he got his name.
And I'll try to fill in the blanks as best I can.
I have the origin of Mwah. I'll be happy to share it with the masses. Okay. It started off, believe it or not, with The Odd Couple. There was an Odd Couple episode, and the guy kept saying throughout the episode, "Where's the bed? Where's the bed?" And so we started. Bender and I would just sit there and go, "Where's the bed?" And John,
how'd that even become
John Powell?
Why is that funny?
I'll explain it. No, I'll explain. John Boog Powell could never say it right. He always said the bah, and that's
right.
how it became.
That's right.
The Mwah.
He's right.
That's exactly how it became Mwah.
But nobody can tell how it went from like a sheep bah, like a Baba Black sheep to Mwah. Like how'd that MW thing get in there?
It just. I think it was Maury.
It's like it's not even like
Maury,
it's a
Maury Pierce. Maury came in the book and he says like Mwah. It was like really weird.
I think he's right.
It was weird how
I
it
know
started.
He's right. Look how confident he is.
And that's where the Mwah came from. It was up there. It was next to the quote that Moss had by his bed that Maury Pierce said, and Morris wrote it down on the wall. It said, "Girls are great, but basketball's more
better,
important."
Or something
true.
Like that.
Words to live by.
Yeah, yeah,
Maury
Moss,
Pierce.
Totally.
That's hysterical, Jake. Man, I think you just
Thank
brought
you.
It back. All.
So that's the origin.
I
of
love
the
that Maury Pierce is like the icing on the cake. He's the guy that like I'm going to put
He's
an MW to the soccer.
Mispronounced your mispronunciation. Boog's mispronunciation.
Otherwise, I'd be walking. Right. He mispronounced.
You would be bad.
So the negatives canceled each other out and made it into a positive.
We would be. It would be here with Duke and Bad.
It'd be moose and sheep.
Well, I think it was the Inters because I got the plaque and you were still.
What do you mean Inters?
No, he was still Bullet
I was
in,
still
in
bullet.
The Rangers.
Yo, kicking it with the Bullet.
He was Howard Bullet Bender, Howie Bullet Bender.
I'm not
going
to tell you why.
That's amazing.
So I think 78 he officially became Mwah.
It wasn't until Inter year that he became Mwah?
Yeah, no, he was Bullet the first couple of years.
It was.
Camp.
It was.
Inter year was when you and I became really good friends.
It's true.
That was the year
were
it
we,
happened.
Were we in this, all in the same bunk as Inters?
No. I was with,
still out, huh?
with Eddie. With Wolgemuth,
right?
A couple other guys, you know, and a couple others,
right?
Maybe
it's,
Rich Aaronwald, even who you mentioned, was
right?
He that year, do you
he
remember
was
Rich
year.
Aaronwald?
I do.
He was like
what
his Alan
was
Friedman.
There? He was a guy who came in like my Alan Friedman, did
right.
a year or whatever.
Right. Yeah. I mean, remember because it wasn't first year seniors. You guys came up. You were actually in the bunk next to us, first year seniors, and then in second year seniors, you came into our bunk and merged with us.
No, that's not true.
I was in with Moss first year.
Senior.
Oh, okay, okay.
I was in the Moss bunk.
It was the
okay.
biggest steal. It was like all of a sudden our bunk got. Pearlstein.
That's
too.
Right.
It's like no bunk
Dewey,
ever challenged
Dewey
again.
That was when Dewey was still in the bunk too.
Carrie
Dewey Diamond.
Somebody knocked him down.
I was trying to name before, like all the Roslyn people, because there's you know you, me, Feldman, Boog. They were essentially the mainstays. But then there were all these other guys, you know, that were you know there for maybe 2 years, 1 year, and it's like six or seven of them.
Yeah, I mean Mitch Rosner, mm-hmm. he was there.
We
like
were discussing him, I don't remember
Eagle
him.
Year. He was kind of really
one
quiet.
Year.
1 year Eagle year, he wasn't there. Merstein is
yeah,
the reason I actually got to Swago.
Oh, that's because, how you got there.
Yeah, I came in from Merstein. So when I started in the cadets in '74, it was Feldman, me, and Merstein. And then
you were at 74, so you were. I was 72, but you were soon after. You were 76.
Yeah, 76. It kind of added. Boo came in 75. Mm-hmm. Mwah came in 76.
You were
good
a cadet.
Good drafts.
I was a cadet.
I was a middie that year,
yep.
And I joined up with you sophomore year as a soph.
Did you? Because we did softs, and then we didn't do juniors. We skipped right from
Correct.
Softs up
to Eagles. Yeah, yeah.
Yep. And the Mwah.
Oh, really?
Came in.
75. You weren't a junior.
There was no, I was no. in the junior year. That we just
I was assumed
that.
You guys were. That's funny.
I think they just got rid of that. I think there was like a less campers, and that was the
yeah.
The
that was my most. That was my most tormented year. Was the soft year because Gary Goldberg was our group leader.
I remember him.
Boog, you know, Boog, everyone who knows
Boog. He's a big fella, right?
Well, Boog, remember, Boog was always the most serious camper there ever was. And so Boog always got stuck with me in the boating with him. He hated it, but it happened. He'd always
pick me. I do picture them two in a boat together.
But the crazy part was he was cool with it when we went on canoe trips because he would sit there and stare in the back and I would be the guy rowing like an idiot in the front. But what happened was we were on Swago Lake. We're in a sailboat. Gary Goldberg's on the lake in a canoe. And Boog is steering and I just was pissed one day and I wasn't even paying attention. Next thing you know, bam! We hit Gary Goldberg. The entire canoe capsized. Boog is, of course, freaking out. Gary Goldberg does with his finger. Don't say a word. I'm docking you from breathing. And the rest of the summer was just very painful. Really? And that was my soft. That's
you were
my
allowed
soft
to breathe, though. I think
they eventually allowed the guy
you know
to
what?
Breathe.
In the evening, now you can.
So you've been enjoying the ski slope. We appreciate that.
Yeah, it's great.
Does it bring you back to Swago?
Yeah, I mean, but the cool part is I'm honored. I mean, you guys have had Moose, Eddie, Krause.
Oh, come on, man.
I mean,
Al,
no, but my former bunkmates, Arnie Heller. I mean, these are guys.
You're a former bunkmate.
No, but I'm saying, but these are guys that like I remember growing up
yeah,
with.
Yeah, for sure. Know? Arnie Heller was a great episode.
Yeah, Arnie was good.
You guys
we
got to
do the game.
Job.
We want to get, I think as far as like the Arnie thing, the next person we'd want to get in that same paradigm is what's his fellow name? Oh, I'm Broad. Gary Broad.
Paul Broad.
Paul Broad.
Which
one?
Paul Broad.
Yeah, Paul, Paul's cool.
Paul, I don't think I ever knew, but
you
Gary,
know him?
But Gary was there, right? When I was there. He was like a waterfront guy, if I remember correctly.
Who, Gary
Broad?
Gary
Broad?
Paul Broad was the water.
Oh, Paul Broad was? Okay.
Now, Paul Broad has an interesting connection to us because he's married to Moss's sister, Susie.
Right.
So that's a whole kind
okay,
of connection.
Okay, so Gary's the older one and Paul's the younger one.
I believe so.
Okay.
I believe
so. One of the Broads.
And it's funny, yeah, the young one's married to Susie Moss.
It's not Broad, isn't it?
It's a dame.
No, it's isn't it a Gottlieb that was supposed to be? Burl Gottlieb, isn't that who?
What?
Who is everyone going on would be the best guest who knows? Oh, Jake.
Jake. Steve Jake. Jacobs.
Steve, that's who everyone keeps saying is the one who knows all the stories. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of Jakes running around Swago. I mean, I kind of stole it from Dave Jacobs. He was the original Jake.
I know. It's funny. That guy went with Cobbs. It's like, no, I'm not going to take the Jake part. I'm going to take the Cobbs part. I'm going to take the suffix.
Too confusing for me. When did you move out to L.A.?
Went to L.A. in 1990. It was kind of awesome because...
right after college, like a few years after college.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, I finished Indiana University that May of 90.
IU? Who's
IU. Yeah. And 2 weeks after I graduated, I moved to L.A. and started working right for MCA Records. So, I mean, that kind of crap
it's like a Skinned song, man.
It was. Well, but it was still kind of cool because you had real musicians in the studio. I mean, my first album I worked on was The Outfield. That was kind of interesting.
Which album was that again?
That's about as 1990 as
you know
get,
what I
right?
remember? You as a youth.
What is that?
You would say that I want to be the drummer in John Cougar Mellencamp.
Hall & Oates.
Hall & Oates.
John Cougar Mellencamp wasn't even around yet. It's Hall & Oates, man.
Hey, you
man.
Were like, I aspire
although, you know,
to be
at the
Hall
time,
Oates
I wasn't a Hall
drummer.
I got to say, at the time, I wasn't a Hall & Oates guy, but have you seen Daryl's House, the internet series he puts on?
I haven't watched that yet. Is
fantastic,
it any good?
Fantastic, man. It's so good. He just brings these other musicians to his farmhouse in Connecticut.
Is that on Palladia or something, or where is that?
I think it's on a channel, I'm not sure, but you can get him just on the internet. Just go Daryl's House.
I think it's on Palladia. So
brings guys in to just jam other songs and
that's cool.
It's great.
Yeah, totally.
Chicks dug him, man. I figured kiss
still,
on my list.
Do you still play drums? Are you like active playing drums at all? No.
You know what? I did it for a while, and then it kind of got in the way, and it's like you can't practice in apartments in L.A. It's just there's not enough room and the sound. And
can't get the electronic thing going?
It's been so busy. It's just everything going on, and it's like between the job career changes and everything happening, it's like the music just kind of slipped.
Yeah, you can't.
We never
everything.
Jammed enough, you and me. That's like one of my, I mentioned that on a prior podcast. Like, I feel like you and I played like... Because you were a drummer, but we were active, I think, players at different times. Like you were much more of a drummer before I started playing. But I feel like, wow, we've never really even played together except for the Swago Talent Show maybe
which
one
was
day,
with David Wallman, the human microphone stand. It was great.
It was great. Wole, if you're out there.
Wole.
I think he's in Czechoslovakia right now.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Do you think he lives in Czechoslovakia?
No, he doesn't. I think he's visiting.
By the way,
I keep seeing pictures of him with his thumb up in Czechoslovakia.
Czech Republic.
Oh, really? It's not Slovakia anymore?
You've got a lot of offended.
Is that what? Really?
Czechs.
What did I do? Why? Well, how did that work out?
The
There's no Slavia?
It's the Czech Republic. No,
what happened to Slavia?
I don't know. It's just the Czech Republic.
Went with the Russians.
I was there.
I guess.
There?
It's the Soviets,
nice
right?
Nice little place, Prague.
Yeah, Prague.
I've not been there,
but I heard it's beautiful. And
I've been. Beautiful.
Yeah,
loved it.
It's a great place.
Loved it. Enjoyed it tremendously. So I think one of my favorite memories, like I have so many memories of being with you. Like, you know, you were around in my life for so many years.
Exactly.
But there's something like, I remember the counselor year a lot. Like that really I have a lot. I mean, maybe because it's the most recent and our brains are the most developed, but we had a fucking good time.
It's almost like we had our group a little bit because it was you, me, Feldman, and Jake. as and noodle and noodles too,
right?
But I'm saying a group as campers because we were all sort of counselors together.
Noodles,
stuff. Noodles too, first to a certain degree too was
Feldman, of course, right?
No, well, the thing was we hung out all the time as counselors. We went out drinking. We went out, came up the bunk. Of course, you know,
Skinners.
But there was always pranks.
Days
I mean,
off.
We'd like to play pranks on each other. I remember you and I, Pearl and I, bet Mwow.
Mwow was the hot foot.
No, Mwow was somewhere on the soccer field with the girl he was dating, and you and I decided to pull up in the Porsche. Remember that?
Mentioned a lot lately.
You know, that scared the shit out of me, that thing. It really did.
It should have, you and Margie.
You were sitting there in the field.
I'm like in the goal. We're like in the goal, right?
And of course, if it wasn't bad enough, the car freaked out.
Like, I don't
you
know.
You and I laughing at them.
Like, I just hear a car.
We were at the canteen. I do remember
tell
this
a story,
clearly.
Man.
We were at the canteen, and I guess... You and this woman, Margie, was a counselor over at Swatona.
A gymnastics instructor at Swatona.
Just so everybody knows what he was dealing with, you know?
Right.
And I know that somehow he ended up taking her to go, you know, kiss and make out like people do. And how did we – I don't know how we knew he was on the soccer field, but we knew.
We knew.
How'd you know that?
I don't know.
You must have said
it's not
something.
You probably
place.
Told us. Like, you were going now thinking we would come with a car.
I'm questioning myself. Like, what am I doing there? Like, that's an odd place
to
go
like
to.
In the, he was in the middle of the field.
it was like watching Animal House where you had
so we go get the car.
Pinto.
Put the brights on. And just come like speed at you. Like,
no, you didn't come speed at me. You stayed away for a while and revved up the engine like a bull, like a bull that was about to charge
me with the horns. You and I were doing the Deathmobile scene from Animal House.
That was awesome.
It was scary because I didn't know it was you guys. I thought it was maybe some townie from like Galilee or some shit like that. Like they're gonna run over my woman and me. You know?
You think they could get through the
goalpost?
That thing that we had blocking the entrance to Swago? Townie.
Dude, Johnny Liebman says this all the time, and he's right about it. Swago is the only camp I know that had a public road going through it. Like all the other camps had fences and
gates.
That's
not true. Equinunk had a road going through it.
No, it didn't. It had a gate. There was all the other camps had gates.
Equinunk had a road going through it. Yeah, they had a bridge.
A public road that you could just drive through Equinunk and get on.
Yes. No. Wait. Hold on. I'm sorry. My son's other camp, Camp Walden, had it.
I don't know from Walden.
I apologize.
Get your facts together, man. Equinunk.
But it's a camp.
All right. No. Okay. I'm going to go up to Camp Walden tomorrow and check that out.
You know what? Well, this is not relevant right now. I was going to talk about this thing with my friends with other camps, but I don't want to go there. Everyone at all the other camps thinks they beat us at intercamp games, and we've spoken about that.
No.
We have to have a conversation about this.
Yeah, no. We did really well. The only problem was, I just remember the craziest thing was you and I waited for the entire Starlight tournament. And we were thinking that, you know, we can have a possibility.
Which was Kuma, right? Kuma had gone
Kuma
out.
Kuma went out. Yeah. Is that, for whatever reason, like,
I don't
they
remember
just,
that.
They
just the last year,
no,
Kuma,
the last year Kuma stopped
Starlight
hosting.
Starlight
picked it up. You and I were like, okay, we think we could do this, but we were missing one player. Like, had Feldman come back or somebody, would have had
Feldman at his level now, we would have won it.
No, dude, I was 17. I'm sorry.
No, but it's somebody who can basically deal with
it. I was 16.
Yeah. He was 16 in 3 days, and we respected the rules.
Listen, man.
But we had two.
He was shaving at that point. He couldn't play.
But we had two like obstacles. One was there were just the two of us. Then on top of that, visiting day. And I'll never forget, they decided to let the parents come out to our semifinal game.
I remember
game.
This.
And all I remember is hearing, Harlan
shoot the
ball, Harlan. And Harlan Kaplan, every time he got the ball, would shoot it. And you and I were looking at each other like, what the hell? It's a semifinal game.
And hear it like... Not the best player. I don't remember what level he was, but he clearly was not the guy who should be consuming most of the attention.
Not at all. Okay. Not at all.
No.
What's he even doing in?
Right? Harlan, shoot the ball, Harlan, right? They mixed fucking visiting day with that was not good.
Listen, better to have those good younger guys in there like Eric Wolf, Tim Brody, Rocky.
No.
Get those guys in there, man. Those guys could play.
It was really like that transitional year. And then on top of it, so we wound up losing. And then I forget.
Yeah, we lost.
Something happened where we all got sick. Going to the quarterfinal for the third place.
He's
and,
right about this.
And we all wound up taking...
He's got a memory like I've been...
It's amazing, but it rings. It's like, oh, yeah.
No, the only reason I remember this is that we all took like this stuff from the infirmary and we all got loopy. We all fell asleep on the way to the game. And Coach Nass was like, what the hell is with you guys? We finally woke up in like the halftime, but it was too late and we couldn't recover from it. But I just remember you and I were like just looping around the basketball court. The only thing that was cool about it, when I was playing Coming Up by Paul McCartney, I think That was the only thing I remember.
I remember that. The live version, too.
The live version.
Which
live version
year was, which better year than was that? That was first 80. Year senior?
No, second.
So first year senior was the year we played Lavi, and I punched the ball and hit the guy in the head, and he went down.
That first year. We'd beaten Tyler Hill first round.
Right. And then we were playing Lavi.
And Tyler Hill was supposed to be tough, so we were like, oh, shit, we got Lavi, and then we're like,
yeah,
and then
we're in the semis. By the way, we'll be debating that with us, whether we beat him.
I know we beat Tyler Hill, because we were pissed about the draw at first. We're like, fuck, we got to play Tyler Hill first round, and we beat him pretty handily.
That was like the first time we played Tyler Hill where we actually weren't going like on one of our campuses, because the last time we were at Tyler Hill,
one of the county tournaments.
Yeah, we had a fight. It was like 78, and we actually, like, this guy Joel started a fist fight on the basketball court.
Jesus, I don't remember.
They loaded us up.
But I believe you.
This resonates too. Like, he was like Joel Barkow.
I can't remember the guy's
name. No, he went to Swago.
Yeah.
Or Brandeis. Somewhere in my life, I know.
Well, if he went to Swago, he might have been the guy that actually started the fight at Tyler Hill.
Oh, you thought it was the Tyler Hill guy? No.
Joel's the Swago guy, right?
The Swago guy. And he basically took a swing at somebody on the basketball court. Next thing I know, we're all being loaded back up on the bus. And that was like the end of intercamp games with Tyler Hill.
Intercamps had some weird endings, man. We had that one with Equinox where I almost lost my mayoralty.
Steve Popkin Moon.
Popkin Moon guy, Moon 2. And then, you know, that was all down on me.
If I can share that story, that
was. We didn't moon the owner, though. I want to clarify. I think we did this already, but we weren't mooning the owner. Well, like, yo, owner, you know, there's
the story,
like, camp.
Right, the story.
How
came
do you know
down
the owner wasn't there? Let's listen to
I'm
Jake.
Sure he was there, Jake. But it wasn't like, hey, owner, we're mooning.
No,
you, we're just mooning.
I don't think
I want to listen to
don't
Jake.
Take it so personally. Jake, take the floor.
I don't think you
I'm gonna drink some wine.
I don't think you mooned the owner. I think what happened was it got back to the owner. Dave pulled me aside. I'll never forget that night. He pulled me aside and he said, after the evening things, I'm going to call the camp together, and we're going to impeach Howie Bender. And
I'm going
to
fight
that
shit,
Dave. You're
going
to become the mayor. And I'm like, Dave, wait a second.
Really?
I said, yeah, it was true.
You didn't know this?
No, it was true. And I said, Dave.
You don't know this story?
Wait a second.
Yes, I do know this. I'm just remembering that you were getting impeached.
Yeah, you knew I was going to lose my story.
No, but I said, no, but wait a second.
I didn't know Dave called Jake to the
side.
Dave doesn't know me. He knows me as the entity that cursed
him. I was deputy mayor. And so I said, Dave, I was there. I can't handle this role. I don't think it was Howie. Come on. I don't think you should do it. He goes, okay. I just wanted the Coke and the Hershey bar. I didn't want to be the mayor.
Too much responsibility, man. Things were running well.
So that's what happened. He called me up and he postponed it.
Yeah, Dave was mad at me.
But I don't think he forgave you, though.
He was mad at you. I remember
He had a discussion with me. It's weird. Like, Dave and I, like, our only conversations throughout the years.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know Dave either.
Was me being in trouble. Like, we never really sort of talked about anything else other than, like...
Because you're a rabble-rouser.
I'm not really, though. I'm not really a rabble-rouser.
Which is the funny part of it. You're just being honest and being straight.
Yeah.
You had a little fun with everyone else.
Sure.
And all of a sudden,
I'm in on the good stuff, right. Like, so, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Anyway.
But we kept it. Thanks to Snake. And it's funny, like, Popkin, too, thanked you because you'd saved him and Eddie, I guess, when they were accused of letting the boats out on the lake. And they said, like, Jake, talk to Dave. So I guess Dave really held you in high regard, man.
You know what? I had an insider. A lot of people don't know. The reason why Dave Reed and I were very tight was 75. My first girlfriend was Marion Brody. So I had that in.
I always thought because you painted the teepee for her.
Wait, and they knew you were going out with Marion?
They knew I was going out married.
Oh, that's cute. That is an in.
Do you remember burning your left leg because you painted the teepee in like some... like runners, like jumping position.
No.
Yeah,
you painted. I remember the this. TP. You don't remember? You blocked the shit out. This one. I remember
painting the teepee, but
you painted the teepee. You came for back no hours. For some reason, you sat in a certain position.
Oh, really?
Where your entire left leg was like
one portion of your leg
lobster.
Was sunburned.
Oh wow! Like No. That you remember? I gave you that one.
But the teepee looked great.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
The way you did those. Aztec designs.
Right? Nobody kicked that shit out with Jake.
You know what?
He kicked our ass on that scoreboard shit too in 79, right?
I could have had a career making burrito wrappers, but you see that?
No.
You blew it.
Yeah, no, I mean, the scoreboards were cool. It was like...
You were artistic that way.
The greatest guy, though, Donald Tanzer, created some of the most amazing...
He's come up a few times.
I know. We got to get him on.
Well, remember,
Sharon, I know, but I don't know Donald.
Was he the guy in the bunk with Ed Burke?
He ran against Ed Burke for mayor.
Yeah.
Who was the guy that Ed Burke was telling us in the After Dark episode?
Johnny Unis, bro.
Oh, Johnny. Yeah,
you can forget Johnny Unis.
Johnny Unis. They sounded so
Johnny Unis, I think, was... Johnny Unis was a Rosalind guy, because Mimi Unis...
I remember Mimi Unis,
But
Mimi Unis, that's an awesome name.
She was back in the Swetona era. But no, I mean, Donald Tanzer played trumpet. I remember that. But he drew... the greatest scoreboard with all the superheroes. It was the Spider-Man, the Hulk. That was
good, man.
That was amazing.
The Marvel comic one stands out in my mind.
That was Donald. Yeah.
One of my
you were good. You're a hunter. You're a great white.
That was
great. Green
was
hunter.
A very
or white
good one too, with the net.
He didn't have much competition
But Moss gave me the idea because of the book he got us turned on to was Where All the Wild Things Are. Yeah. I took that
you
book.
You were competing with Boog, who was doing the Iliad.
No, me, Boog, and Feldman did the Odyssey. And we had Medusa, and none of us were artistic. It looked like
nobody
shit.
Knew what
and nobody even knew what the Odyssey was. And so Homer travels along. what the fuck is he talking about? Where's Captain America?
Everyone was sitting in the auditorium like, what the fuck is this thing?
Is this a history lesson?
Where's Batman?
Then Jake comes out and has a hunter with a rhino and just drops a net on the motherfucker, and it works perfectly. I guess we lose.
What's the split
on that, man? Is it 30-30? I think it's 60-0.
God, we're fucking doing trilogies from the early days.
Yeah. Our theme is Catcher in the Rye. Holden.
I wish it was that contemporary. You were doing something from the Greek era or something.
Well, it didn't work out for us. It was lofty goals.
It was like you had him going around in a big circle stopping at all the places in Homer's journey.
We did. We had the sirens.
The white sirens. Medusa, the Cyclops.
I think everyone would have to agree that was the greatest worst scoreboard.
Absolutely.
Oh, totally.
From his mind, Boog's mind, it was brilliant. But it's
Green
just,
Odyssey, but 79.
That was 70. That was the year before. That's
your thing. When you're a first-year senior, you do the scoreboards. Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's where your artistic shit comes out. Oh, nobody knows, and nobody knows who's artistic, but we knew Jake was. So,
all right. Take a quick break. We'll be right back.
We's back.
Back with the snake. So you're just saying.
Yeah. So the last thing I'll talk about with the book, and we'll move on, is
I want to hear about the movie.
What's really cool about it was I
who's going to play you in the movie? Who would play Jake in the movie?
Affleck. It's got to be Affleck.
Ben Affleck with the goatee.
Yeah, I was thinking Brad Pitt, but no.
Affleck's a good looking dude.
Affleck's good.
There's no shame in Affleck.
No way.
No. So the last thing I'll talk about is that I put a lot of stuff in there about things that work for me, didn't work for me. I wanted to really be honest for kids. But the thing I talk about a lot is planning, because a lot of us didn't know what was going on, you know, back when. And I want people to be able to land their dream job, do things that really mean something to them. And I'm happy to say, for me, 3 years ago, I always loved investing. It's like became a hobby for me.
Okay.
And I got involved with what's called Online Trading Academy. They're like a global educational, investment
company.
Help
people do day trading and stuff?
Well, it's basically teaches you how to trade like professionals. And I did a lot of
technical strategies.
Technical strategies. Right. Like if you were going to Goldman Sachs, I understand how professional traders work. And it's the first
thing
that
you trade yourself?
Yeah. I trade futures, Forex.
Oh, so you do this to generate income.
Yeah, I do that kind of when I'm not doing the book stuff. But what was really cool was when I walked in there, I met this guy named Todd Davis, who was brilliant, became my mentor.
Okay.
And I said, in 3 years, I want to basically teach for the academy. And so happy to say I finished my training last week, and I'm teaching my first stock options class in Baltimore in November. So
awesome, man. And you're a doctor, right?
A doctor.
As of 24 hours ago. So everything's coming home to roost.
To quote the Grateful Dead, what a strange... Great trip.
Or to quote
me quoting the Grateful Dead.
Or to quote them correctly.
Where's the Jack Daniels? But
we got it in the back, man.
Yeah, that for breakfast.
Pull this guy a shot.
Did you have Jack for breakfast?
I passed on the OJ. But no, yeah, you're right. It took 10 years. And I thought when I first started it, I always wanted to do something.
So is this what you're doing? I mean, I don't want to get personal, but is this what you're doing to make money? The book's coming out. You trade? Like you're day trading?
I'm trading. I do trading. I'm also doing college speaking. I'm also going to be teaching. So I want
you got a lot going on, my friend.
Yeah, I worked in the entertainment industry. It was fun until it started to not be fun. Mm-hmm. And 22 years, as Steve Popkin talked about with you guys a couple weeks ago, it's not the same industry. Mm-hmm. I started in 1990. It was very
just quoting
different.
Popkin from the ski slope. I'm loving this shit.
No, but it was great. I mean, look,
we're becoming the source.
As Steve Popkin said in episode 6.
No, but what's great was he's right. I mean, look, when I first started, I got thanked on the Spinal Tap record. I worked on.
Did you?
Yeah, Sublime.
You got spanked on
the guy
spinal
that came
tap?
Up with turning it up to 11?
No, I mean, Spinal Tap came out with this crazy album back in the early 90s, and I wound up administering it, and I...
Was it the soundtrack from the movie?
No, it's a brand new album they came out with. It didn't do great, but they thanked me on it to help me.
All right, listen, man.
But it was kind of like one of those things you like say to your kids. Your kids,
good thing.
Hey, and worked with B.B. King. I started up with Puffy when he first started. It was like I was really involved with him.
P. Diddy.
It was Puffy back then.
Was he ever Puffy? Was Puff Daddy? Was he Puffy?
You called
Puff
him Puffy? Puff Daddy, then went to Puffy.
He went with Puffy for a while. Yep. Right. During the Jake years.
I always called him Sean.
But no, my coolest thing I was...
Is that a... Jay-Z.
Mr. Wallace is what I call him.
Mr. Wallace. I call him Baby Baba Boogie.
Jay-Z is something Wallace. Something.
Dude, how racist was Baby Baba Boogie? Do you ever look back at that and be like, come on, man. How did somebody over 30 not say, you know,
dude, might
not
be the greatest. That was some of the, we did some of the racist freaking
shit. Well, we were young kids.
There weren't any intentions of it being so. I'm just surprised that like nobody.
The counselors and the group leaders didn't stop it.
Maybe things change. But
it was a different time in the 70s.
Totally. So you were. There was some other Swago shit you wanted to get.
Yeah,
to
no, that, I think it was cool. It's just you had been having so many amazing guests to me that I just wanted to bring up some of the people and inspirations. I mean, you know, Eddie Burke. He was one of the first.
I love
guys.
Him, man.
Yeah, he's amazing. And it was like I first got to catch up with him back maybe 10 years ago. I actually laughed because he was the first mayor that I ever had.
Yeah,
and we used to joke because you know you brought up one of the ski slope episodes. I remember you and I and like, I think Popkin, all of us like hung out in the backwoods where you had the lean tunes. Yeah. And we we didn't really want to be involved with Senior Hunt, and then kids found us. But Eddie was worth like -10.
That was the thing about Senior Hunt. It was like there were as many people with negative points associated with him as positive. So you may as well just sort of sit in social and not do anything.
Yeah, I mean, and then you got Moose. I mean, I loved Moose. I mean, Moose gave me a couple of dead legs here and there, but you respected him. I mean, these guys really like.
I think Moose is almost the most famous.
Integrated into the whole Swago
person
world,
of everyone.
Totally.
You know? Yeah, but I mean, Bobby Krause, I mean, I only remember hanging out with him. And, but I mean, to me, the greatest inspiration for all of us was Moss. I mean,
absolutely.
Mike Moss
was
like.
We got to get him to call in.
Yeah.
I know.
Moss was like the big, like you mentioned, Moss was like our big brother. We were all the oldest in our family. So Moss
Which is
kind
weird,
of adopted
right? It was
us.
Weird. It sort of worked out that way.
Except for Schnapp. Schnapp had older sister. But, you know, it was just cool. I mean, he kind of took us out. I mean, he took us to see Animal House.
And Rocky, too.
Rocky 2, and it was just
opening night for Rocky 2.
But he also shared books with us. Like he had us reading John Steinbeck,
Vonnegut.
I mean, it was like
Fahrenheit 451 or
something. Yeah, it was Cat's Cradle.
Cradle.
Fucking calling again. Keep
you know,
going.
But it's like things like that were like really important. And it was
I know because I didn't read books other than I needed to read it for my book report and. You know, in school. So,
but all the old guys. I mean, I actually got to hang out with a lot of them when I was younger because they were cool. Like Andy Luger was really great. Mitch Kaplan, Dave Jacobs, Jake.
Yeah.
You know, but you felt like you could really approach them. And a lot of what I took on as being a second year senior was things I learned from them because they were really cool to me when I was younger. Yeah. So,
well, it's a family thing. You know, all of a sudden you become this big brother figure to somebody else who's younger than you. You know.
Yeah. No. You know, it's funny because you know I talk about this when I'm doing business school lectures and. I say this all the time about a small business. What's make them successful was something I learned from a business professor. And I think this is what really makes Swago Swago. Because you think about it, was you got to have at least one or two things to make a business successful. It's either one, you got to have a vision, or two, you have to have a culture. And Swago had both. I mean, the vision was.
I'm not so sure about the vision, but the culture. The culture was.
The culture was off the hook. Mm-hmm. I think we had an amazing culture, but also the vision was you wanted to go through the ranks. You wanted to get that color war sweat.
Oh. As a camper, I see what you're saying. Yeah,
and
no,
so
definitely.
You admired the older kids.
Yeah, but I was telling Alan before, it's surprising to me that like Boog and Feldman in particular, like and Boog too in particular, didn't come back because they were first year seniors and they didn't come back to be second year seniors to be color world leaders and fulfill the whole trek.
But they did something different. They went on teen tours.
I know what you're saying.
You know, there's that was the experience thing, and I think
it's amazing you would just give all that up, like sort of that you know this is your last year to do it. I mean, I would think a teen tour is still something that's. Possible the following summer if you really wanted to do it.
But I really believe there were certain campers, you know, we were definitely the three of us were involved that like that was an important thing to go up the ranks and that was the sweater. I mean, I remember wearing a bunch of Color War Leader sweaters during Senior A. I mean, and it was funny.
No piece of clothing ever as important as a Color War
sweater.
Yeah,
and it was really funny because going into Dave's house when we were tapped, I wanted to be a white leader. That's all I ever talked about was I was going to be white. And the second we sat down, I'm like, green. I don't know what flipped. Maybe it was Brad Goldsam because his dad was a legacy. But at that time,
did they know at the time that did they assign colors when we were tapped?
No. What the deal was, we basically did was we flipped a coin and basically you got
in
color.
Dave's house.
In Dave's house, you got to choose
that was the last
color.
One, yeah.
Yeah, well, you choose color. Yeah,
you guys may have flipped that coin already. I don't know.
No, we chose color, and the other team got to pick the first two teams they wanted.
Right.
And so we didn't have that problem because we all agreed we were going to be green and white. It was like it wasn't.
Oh, there wasn't even a coin flip. It was just
no,
like we want white. You guys,
yeah.
Green.
Then we flipped the coin to determine who would get the first.
Do you remember this? Do you
choice?
Remember how I forget how you figured out who on the leaders were the green team versus the white team? And Jake was saying there was a coin flip, but we passed on it. We were like we had agreed who would be white.
Yeah, you guys.
And once they selected the three and the three, they would say.
Right, they'd have a coin flip for who's white and green.
Yeah, unless
did they already know? I do not remember. You know, the girls. Did they know? You just said this. I walked away and
they knew the
teams.
They know the teams. Like the three versus three is set up.
Yeah, the three versus three was set up, and that was the weird part because, as you guys mentioned, they were looking for Gottlieb, Jeff, and they couldn't find him.
That was a crazy story.
No, it was crazy, and I remember all of us.
Do you remember that?
We were sitting there, and all of us were just like,
"Of course, it's moi."
Yeah,
I don't know if you did mwah. That could just as easily have been Jeff Gottlieb as far as Dave's concerned.
It's like a lot, you know, like without saying words, I was looking in Snake's eyes and we were saying,
really?
Mwah.
Were you really?
Yeah, because the way it was lined up,
my boy.
It's highly likely that happened.
We were sat on the couches in the order of how it was.
Do you remember that room? It was a weird room that we were in.
Yeah, it was his living room.
I remember. I got yelled at in there.
We were two couches facing each other.
You made me get yelled at in there, but I hope you remember.
By the way.
That's okay. Fuck you. Stop the social.
But what you don't understand was the funniest thing of all of that. The funniest
strikeout king.
The funniest thing of all of that was him negotiating with Dave to get himself.
Awesome.
He was like this. No, Dave, you don't understand. I gotta see Dina Leibowitz. It's like I'll wash. I'll mop the mess hall floor for like a month.
I was putting that on the line.
Dave, I'll make yours and Rita's bed for the next 12 years.
He was doing these crazy negotiation things to see Dina.
I think he passed, and I got. Doc.
It
I think
funny.
I did get Doc.
Wait,
I
have
got
to
Doc,
comment.
Man. You brought up with me.
I have to say,
fucking
what you said earlier is right, man. You got fucking reprimanded.
That's all I did from Dave. That's it. That's my entire relationship with Dave was being reprimanded by
Dave.
Him.
Just like had a beef with you about
because he never
three
came,
things,
and he never even came to my house to give the tour. Like I signed up for Swago six
right,
days
well,
before
we
camp
heard that
started.
Story, right?
Yeah, so it was like I had nothing to do with the guy other than getting yelled at.
I gotta believe Swago and Mwah was nothing more than the Truman Show. Every time Dave was on cue to come out when something happened, but no, I did SOK.
We were in those dugouts.
Yeah,
we were
no,
in the
I was
main
in,
field.
I was in first base. I'm going SOK, and he goes F you. He struck out.
You can curse on him. Fuck you.
Strikeout king. He struck out.
Right.
Struck out.
What a good friend from Ross.
Jake from first base is like SOK. Strikeout king. And I retaliate with a fuck you right on Diamond One loud, so Dave and Rita can hear it as they're trying to watch some TV.
No, but in Mwah's defense,
how dare you interrupt the Maury Show at 4? Whatever it was.
But no, but was great. No, what was great with Mwah was Dave came out and said, "Who said that?"
Wow, Mwah's an honest dude.
No, he always fessed up. He always fessed up. No, he always fessed up to
man.
His crap. I mean, I give him that. You know.
Oh, man. Well, I got to say, I mean, I don't mean to cut it off, but
now we got to do it.
We got to cut it off. We hit that point.
This is awesome.
You have been. This has been amazing. I've had the best time. This has been one of our. I'm so happy. It doesn't matter. They're all great appearances. This has been fucking so much fun.
Yeah, it's great.
You got to come call in every now and then.
I'd love to.
Be one of our regulars.
When you're back in town, always.
You know, I'll be
this
like
this home is your home.
You're on the slope.
Well, if you need, you know, like the New York Times, you need me to fact check, I could be happy to do that. Just like,
well, yeah.
You know, send me
it's
a voice.
You should be. You know what? That'll be the thing. If we have any dilemmas now, we'll be like, you know, ask Jake.
You've
you know?
Got the mind of an elephant. It has been so fucking amazing.
And the app.
Hello, this is Mwah.
And the app.
Hello.
This is Mwah. You know, I'm gonna sign off with that tonight. I'm going to sign off with
that. Well, before you guys sign off, the appetizer was great. I was really starting to dig the story. It was bringing me back.
We're going to get there Tuesday.
That was a pretty intense time for all of us.
It's going to happen soon. Yeah.
I remember
Tuesday.
Feldman and I watching you guys driving off in the Porsche.
Listening to the final cut. Like setting
that,
it to Pink Floyd.
I'd like to sign off with...
Goodbye. This is Mwah.